Carroll bringing it forward. Thompson's making the run. Carroll hangs on to it though. Still David Carroll. Could go all the way here. Oh, what a goal!
Hello, I'm Phil Catchpole and welcome to Ringing the Blues. Coming up on this week's show, we have all the action and reaction from the Millwall game. We catch up with John D. Taylor and the Ex-Players Association. We hear about a great charity effort from Chairboys fan Ross Jevons for Baby Loss Awareness Week. Plus, we preview the trip to Reading with Mark Mayo of Tilehurst End podcast. But first, let's head off to Mexico City for the results with Uri.
We are ringing the blues from Mexico City. My name is Uri, and here are the results for the Championship League. Barnsley 2, Bristol City 2, Birmingham City 0, Sheffield Wednesday 1, Blackburn Rovers 0, Nottingham Forest 1, Bournemouth 0, Queen's Park Rangers 0, Brentford 2, Coventry City 0, Luton Town 0, Stoke City 2, Middlesbrough 0, Reading 0, Rotherham United 1, Norwich City 2, Swansea City 1, Huddersfield Town 2, Wycombe Wanderers 1, Millwall 2. And now for Chairboys Spanish. Of course you saw what Jacobson scored, but the referee claimed it was a shirt pull on the goalkeeper. Come on, referee. Now let's go on parts for the Chairboys Spanish. Goalkeeper, portero, shirt, camisa, pull, jalar. Le jalaron la camisa al portero. Come on, referee. But hey, okay, so did you know that what Jacobson was to accomplish? Well, here in Latin America, we call it an Olympic goal. Why? My amigo Phil Catchpole didn't know we called it that way in Latin America. So, let's go back to 1924, in the times of the Olympic Games of Paris, where the national team of Uruguay became champion. So, sometime later after the Olympics, there was a friendly match between Argentina and Uruguay, and the Argentinian striker Cesario Onsari scored a goal from a corner kick. And they called it an Olympic goal because he scored it against the Olympic team of Uruguay, the Olympic champions. So, here in Latin America, a corner kick goal is called an Olympic goal. Now you know, the more you know, the better. Back to the London studios in England with my amigo Phil Catchpole.
The Chairboys were on the hunt for a first championship goal and also points, whilst Millwall were looking for a second away win of the season. Who'd be sick as a parrot on the full-time whistle? Here's what happened.
The extra week has probably given Adebayo Akinfenwa, Dominic Gaebichi, Igpeazu, you know, more time to get fit and get ready. More fitness into the likes of Curtis Thompson, who I thought was good against Luton. And obviously we brought Josh Knight in from Leicester in that two-week period, which has been one of our big targets throughout the summer window.
Woods plays it in field for Millwall. Backwards they go to goalkeeper Biakowski. Cashgate put him in under pressure. He might nick it off of him here. Cashgate will nick it off him. And that's the first goal that Wickham have scored in the Championship. And Cashgate has got it for the Wanderers. Biakowski, what on earth is he doing? Cashgate gets the first ever goal for Wickham in the Championship. 1-0. Jed Wallace coming forwards now, crosses in, it's a decent one towards goal, a bit of a push in the box and the referee has given a penalty. He says that there was a push on Matt Smith. Wallace against Allsop then, early days of the second half, and Wallace shoots and scores, smashes it in, and it's 1-1 at Adams Park. Romeo now, Romeo crossing, edge of the penalty area it goes, here's danger here, strike on goal, finds the back of the net and it's a very good finish from Ryan Leonard who volleys into the top right hand corner. He found himself with a bit of the room edge of the area and Millwall take the lead, Wickham 1, Millwall 2.
Gareth, it's another defeat, but a spirited performance.
Yeah, I'm glad you said. You know, and I'm again, you put your name to some performances like that, and the boys battled, really battled. Good to see Akin Fenwell back. You know, he's going to make a big difference. I asked for the basics to be done correctly today, and do you know what? We did it for 99%, but one mistake on one goal has cost us. But then we went up the other end and we scored. The referee has somehow disallowed it. Please, please, if you can, have a look at the replay, because I have no idea what he's given. But it's just not going for us at the moment. We are Wickham, we're in the Championship. Maybe it's not going for us at the moment. I'm sure it'll turn. And I'm hoping that we can put more performances like that on the pitch and make it difficult for teams to get results here. And Millwall have battled. They've had to battle really hard for their result today. And that's what you've got to do to beat Wickham. Fair play, they've done it. But we'll be back on Tuesday.
I confirm we're in the Championship, plus a debut for Anis Mometi. So positives there to take.
Yeah, huge, you know. Anis is a young boy who we took on trial to have a look at the B team, and he's been outstanding in training, really has. And you ask any of my players, they've got, you know, special thoughts about Anis. I think he's got a big future in the game. But it, you know, it's tough. He's not just going to come in and play every week in the Championship. We're going to bed him in the right way. But Akin Fenwell may play every week, because he's huge for us, and he's going to be a thorn in anyone's side at this level. When he's fully fit, along with Gapi and Uchi and Tafazoli and McCarthy, you know, there's some big names there injured at the moment, and I'm looking forward to having a really fully fit squad to choose from, and I'm looking forward to Reading on Tuesday. Let's get recovered, let's give another battle like that, and I'm sure the first win will be just around the corner.
Broken the league scoring duck, not a classic goal, but you'd have taken any form of goal, I'd imagine.
Scott Cash just made history, and he'd be the first Wickham Wanderers player ever to score in the Championship, and his endeavour there was brilliant, and he deserved that. But just a shame we made you know, one glaring mistake for their first goal, and we didn't really close down the midfielder in the second goal.
The intensity led to that goal, because it was a high press, the intense press from Wickham. Is it a case of being able to build up that mental fitness and overall fitness to do that over 90 minutes? Is that the difference for Wickham?
Do you know, the difference is that there's some cracking players at this league. There really is. You know, you've got clubs paying millions of pounds on loan fees, never mind wages and transfer fees. We just cannot do that. And one day, hopefully, you never know. But at the moment, really proud of what a club we are, where we are, and how we're taking to this Championship. I'm sure the first win's just around the corner. The first goal's come, that's great. Let's get these first points on the board now. That's what I'm hoping for on Tuesday.
Josh Knight made his debut. You brought him in during the transfer window. You said you wanted maybe one or two more on top of that. They didn't materialise. Has that been frustrating?
A little bit, but you know, we've been here before. We know we can't attract the biggest players, you know, and the best players, but we will attract. There's still options to get free agents in, and I'll be working hard on that. But at the moment, just falling short of getting that first point or that first win. And like I say, on Tuesday, I think it's a big chance again for everyone to come out there fighting fit. You know, Darrell Horgan, we didn't start because of his midweek brilliant against Finland for Ireland, and he came on and made a real difference. There's plenty being said about all the players, and I'm getting to know the squad even better, and I'm looking forward now to getting everyone fit, getting everyone back, and keep putting more performances in like that, because I'm sure the win's not far away.
So the Olympic goal of Joe Jacobson that never was. What did the assistant referee see? Gareth Ainsworth was mystified after the game, as were many of you on Twitter as well. But don't worry, because EFL on Quest's very own Dean Ashton has got himself into the mindset of a criminal striker, and he spent the evening wearing out his pause button to work out what happened.
So this corner that went straight in from Jacobson, nobody saw a foul, nobody in Britain except for you.
Do you know what? I always look at the goalkeeper and his reaction, Bilikowski. There's obviously something gone on. I've gone right to the back of my mind and thought, what's the one thing I might do here? And I looked at it carefully, and Scott Cashgett, I'd love for him to come forward and tell us that this is true, because he's got hold of the goalkeeper's glove behind the defender.
Yeah.
It's so, so subtle, but he's got his arm behind the defender, he's got hold of Bilikowski's glove, and his arm just extends, and then he can't get back. Joe Jacobson's done this many times, so it's clearly something they've worked on. Please, I'd love it if Scott Cashgett gets in touch and tells us that we've spotted it, because it's definitely there. I can see it.
Yeah, it's like Poirot, that. If that's true, that's like Poirot.
It is
nobody
true.
Else. We've all said it was a ridiculous decision, but yeah, I've spotted that.
So, a narrow win for the Lions at Adams Park set the regional voice machine to South East London. Here's what the Millwall fans thought of the game. Silver Lion.
They were poor, and we were a little better parts of the game and got out-muscled in the early stages. Some would say we rode our luck, but others would say we can play much better. The honest truth is we were lucky, especially with that disallowed goal. But we won, and maybe that's all that matters.
Whiskey Lion.
We were hardly lucky. We hit the bar three times, scored twice, and had a stonewall penalty turned down. We gave them a comedy goal, and they had a legit goal chalked off from a corner. But it's hard to see where Wickham are going to get a point this season with the lack of quality they have in their side. Anything other than a win against that shambles can be considered a disaster.
Froda, the blind.
For the disallowed goal, watch their bloke. He holds Bart's gloved hand, and he can't jump. I took four attempts to see it. A good spot by the lino. It wasn't the ref.
SEL.
The win was unconvincing, but I don't think we were fortunate. We weren't at our best at times, but were by far the better team and deserved all 3 points. Wickham were dire, and it showed why they are bottom.
Champs 08.
Apart from the first 20 minutes, we bossed the game and could have had 3 or 4 with a decent finisher.
MFC John.
We should have had a pen when Bradshaw was brought down in the first half, and we also hit the woodwork 3 times. Not a bad return for not playing at our best. Oh, and Bart's hand was held for their disallowed goal.
Brussels Lion.
We were the better team by a country mile in the second half. We could have and should have won by more. They look like a mid-table Division 1 side to me, and it's difficult to see where they will get a point.
Midway Lion.
In my opinion, they dragged us down to their level in the first half, and we found ourselves playing their game.
Overseas Wall.
Job done. We normally lose against lower position teams, so after going 1 down, it was nice to see we kept our cool for once.
A Wickham Wanderers fan whose wife has suffered 4 miscarriages has run 100 miles to raise money for Baby Loss Awareness Week. Ross Jevons chose a distance to signify the 1 in 100 women who suffer recurrent miscarriage, which is 3 or more consecutive losses. He's been getting up early to put the miles in before work, so BBC Three Counties sent reporter Justin Deely to meet him on the Rye whilst running.
Ross, good morning. Talk to me about this outfit, first of all.
Yeah, it's quite eye-catching, isn't it? You have to say, Tommy's, they have a great brand going, so I think you'll certainly catch my pink top when I'm running through Wickham this morning.
Well, we think you're amazing, an amazing cause as well. You're running 100 miles, you started last Friday. Have you ever done anything quite like this before?
Not quite, no. I couldn't really prepare for it. I mean, I'm a keen runner. I've run a couple of marathons in the past, but the most mileage I've ever got up to in a week is probably in the mid-40s. So, yeah, just the sheer load of miles has been a shock to the system. You can't really prepare for it, but it's for such a fantastic cause, so we'll get through it.
And what are you up to at the moment, mile-wise?
So I've got 29 miles to go in 2 days. So I've done 71 to date. I'll do 2 more runs, 1 this morning, and then finish off at Adams Park tomorrow.
How are you feeling right now, Ross? Because, you know, if somebody said to me, you are going to crawl 100 miles in a year, that would scare me. You are running, and you really are running, you know, 100 miles. You've given it your all over a week. You're almost there. You finish tomorrow. How are you feeling at the moment?
Tired. There's certainly fatigue has been the thing that crept in, I think, after the first couple of runs. So trying to force myself out the door when, you know, just replacing the amount of calories that I'm burning has not been easy. A couple of older, you know, getting older now, I'm in my mid-30s, so a couple of niggles, a bit of a knee injury has crept up as well, but I'm getting through it and I know I've only got two more runs to go now. So psychologically, that's quite an easy milestone, I think, to get over.
And how much money have you raised so far?
So just under £3,000 for Tommy so far, which is amazing. I really didn't know what to expect at the beginning of this challenge. You know, it was a bit of a late decision to do it because the London Marathon was cancelled twice. But it's been incredible, the amount of support and the amount of donations we got from people. And hopefully by doing stuff like this today, we'll raise more awareness and hopefully get a bit more money in.
Where can people find out more about you and what you're doing, Ross?
So they can either head to my Twitter page, which is at Ross Jevons, or they can go to the Virgin Money Giving page, search for my name, Ross Jevons, and they'll be able to find my donation page there.
Somebody said to me, why don't you take your tracksuit bottoms down and go for a run with Ross off the back of this? I went, I'll let the expert get on with that. we mentioned it briefly in the introduction. Tell us why you're doing this.
Yes, yeah, so in 2019, unfortunately, my wife and I, Katie, suffered four miscarriages, four consecutive miscarriages, and it was clearly a horrendous time. And whenever I explain it to people, I try to explain that it's not just the days around those losses and the loss itself, which is horrendous. It's the aftermath, really. And you can imagine the anxiety we went through every day of our subsequent pregnancies. Even though we are blessed to have our baby boy Callum this year in 2020, which is incredible, every single day of that 9-month pregnancy for myself and Katie was torture, really, just waiting for the worst to happen. So we are the lucky ones. There's so many out there who don't get to where we've got to today with our baby boy. But ultimately, we're still scarred by the experience, and we still really want to not only raise awareness for an incredible charity in Tommy's, raise money, but also raise awareness, because that's one of the things that we didn't realise is how often or how little it's spoken about.
Congratulations on the birth of Callum, your baby boy. I know you're absolutely over the moon. I had my first child a few weeks ago. I'm almost 40. And as the years went on, we didn't have any issues, thank God. But as the years went on, people would always say to me and my wife, oof, getting on a bit, why have you not had a baby? Now, you've had four miscarriages. You would have heard those comments. They must have been so, so hurtful.
Incredibly, yeah, and that's why I say this is about raising awareness and not just about raising money, because I had countless times where I was asked the question, you know, in a completely innocent way, isn't it about time you're having kids, or, you know, kids must be next on the agenda to you, and it really hurt. And personally, you know, I'm not necessarily a confrontational person, so I wouldn't have been the type to face up to it then, but if people just stop to think that actually people all around the world are in circumstances where they either can't have kids or perhaps have suffered miscarriages or baby loss, then those type of questions are really unhelpful and can be really hurtful.
You're really, really inspiring to listen to. Just before I let you get off, are you up for the run this morning, by the way? You feeling it?
As much as you can do on a cold winter's morning in Wickham, yeah.
What's your advice to anybody going through what you and your partner have been through?
You're not alone. I know it's not always easy to speak out, but certainly seek help, talk to people. It's fantastic charities, not just like Tommy's, but the Miscarriage Association and many others. So seek support and keep looking for answers. And I say that fully in the knowledge that, you know, the answer might not be there for everybody, because that's not like how life works out. But certainly we found ours through the persistence of my incredible wife, Katie. She never stopped looking for answers. She never stopped haranguing various medical professionals until we got what we needed to get. And yeah, just never give up, I guess, would be my message in that respect.
Best of luck. I will see you at Adams Park tomorrow. Thank you very much. And off he goes. You can quite literally hear him jogging off now. An amazing local man. That was Ross Jevons joining us live here in High Wycombe. He is running 100 miles in a week, and he will complete those 100 miles tomorrow at Adams Park, the home of Wycombe Wanderers. Quite an amazing man.
Cheers, Justin. We'll check back in with this story later on in the show.
The ball is flicked on. Here's Samuel on the right channel for Wycombe Wanderers, because it's a Bloomfield. It drops into the box. Off the ball. It goes for goal.
Yes!
And scores!
Oh, Nandy off the goal.
What a start. 1 minute in. Nandy off the ball. His first touch of the ball. Left-footed volley. The keeper, absolutely no chance. Fleetwood 0, Wycombe 1.
Right, on the line now, we've got JDT, John D. Taylor from the Ex Players Association. Now, John, I saw this week that there's some shiny new goalposts up at the training grounds, which you guys and the Ex Players Association have raised money and donated those to the players. I was unaware of this sort of work that you guys did. Talk to me about it.
Well, first of all, the goalposts. We were asked a couple of years ago by Gareth, who at that stage had only got three sets of posts up at the training ground, and he asked us as a favour whether we could supply him with anything else. We did that. The club then went on a fantastic run, scored a lot of goals, and we thought, when he asked again a few weeks ago, we thought, well, I think they need a few goals, we're going to do this, and we did, and Vince Faulkner and Keith Samuels went up and officially presented them at the training ground this week. And lo and behold, we score our first goal, Scott Cashgett. So we're on our way. We'd like to think that the ex-players have got something to do with what's going to be a great revival. But we do, you talked about charity work. Every year we nominate a charity, and it's something to do with, you know, our players have had strokes with, like Peter Sutterby. Glenn Caruso went up to the Wickham Hospital just a few weeks ago, presented them with a 50-inch television to replace their 12-inch black and white one, which was in the stroke unit area, because Peter was in there for some time and said, look, you know, it's driving people mad. They haven't got anything to do. So we put some funds to that. Also to help the stroke unit at Amersham, we provided them with some chairs that can lift people from the beds into a chair and move them again into a room where they can be entertained. We've done prostate cancer, we've done air ambulance every year. And the reason for this is quite simple, Phil, that we are one of the few ex-players associations in the country that charges our ex-players to become members. Now, a lot of people think, oh, no, excuse me, I played for Wickham Wanderers. Why do I have to pay to be an ex-player? But we then explain to them that the money we raise doesn't only go to help us maintain the association, but it also gives us this opportunity to help charities and occasionally to help players who've really, really struggled. So we've got about 110, 120 paid-up members now, which is absolutely fantastic. For the 20 quid a year, we provide them with a newsletter which keeps everybody up to date, and that goes out very regularly. It helps us maintain our Facebook information and other things that we do around the club. We finished Monty's 18 months ago, which is the historic centre for Wickham Wanderers. We then provided montages which go down the players' corridor. But in this summer, I've been working on some massive montages which are going in the foyer. There's going to be a new foyer if and when the fans eventually get back there. And they'll be able to see firsthand the history of the club. And we as ex-players obviously think this is vitally important. And it's not for the old-timers, it's for the youngsters to look and say, God, they were played at Wembley in 1931. They played there in 1957. Look, Martin O'Neill's team played there three times. That's what the kind of recognition that we want to do. Plus, we think that it also helps other players coming into the club to look and think, oh, we're actually joining a club with a fantastic history. So that's part and parcel of our ex-players' role.
Well, I think the fans will very much look forward to seeing that when we all do get back to Adams Park, and fingers crossed that is a day sooner rather than later. And you mentioned Peter Sutterby there, and how's Peter getting on?
Well, it's been a long job. It's been over a year, and he's now hoping to get himself a car that's been specially adapted so he can get out and about, because, you know, he's driving us mad being in lockdown. Poor Peter, you know, in complete lockdown, not able to go anywhere and do anything. And he feels a bit cut off. despite, you know, visits from a lot of our ex-player members and obviously his family. But it's a problem. And, you know, again, we want to help him. We try and encourage him. But, you know, strokes are hard things to get back from. But he is making a recovery.
That's great to hear, Peter Sudbury, former Wickham manager from the 1980s. And, you know, the Ex-Players Association, John, the cornerstone of your activities are the dinners and getting everybody together and the social aspect of it. And obviously the current situation must be making that incredibly difficult. How are you keeping in touch with everybody?
Well, I've widened the Facebook presence, which, you know, I do something on there at least two or three times a week, which keeps everybody up to date. And not only the ex-players, but the fans in general. You know, they read it and realise that we still have a thriving ex-players association. But, yeah, it has been difficult. I mean, John Maskell and Vince organise the quiz every March. We have a bowls tournament. We have a golf tournament, which is fantastically supported. Gareth normally plays. Peter Couig played in his first year there. And then, of course, the dinner, which is the highlight of our year. We take an event and look back on that. You know, it can be 50 years on from the 57 team, or it can be X number of years on from the 07 team. Every year we have a different theme. And this year we were going to be looking at the move from Lokes Park to Adams Park exactly 30 years ago. So it's been a real, real shame. And not only that, it does affect our money-raising opportunities, because the dinner in particular raises a lot of money. People are very generous there. We do raffles and all sorts of stuff during the dinner, and we raise probably the majority of the money that we have to spend during that particular dinner. But, you know, we're no worse off than anybody else. We just got to keep going and know that one day, when, we don't know, but we will be back and we will continue to support both the charities and the club, because the club have been fantastic to us. And since Peter and the Couigs came in, they have taken us under their wing, as obviously Gareth and the playing staff. So we've had a fantastic reaction with them. And I know Vince and Sammy, as I say, went up on Thursday and got a really, really warm welcome from the players and from Gareth and his team. And that's fantastic. And he thinks, I know he thinks, that the work we do does reflect back onto the players who are there today. And let me just say one other thing. I just finished, we've done a Down Memory Lane series of videos, because at the dinners, I produce a lot of videos of that particular era. And of course, once they've gone at the dinner, they're not seen again. So I thought to possibly help out Matt during the fallow time before play restarted, I'd resurrect some of those, remaster them, do various things with them, and put those on the Wickham YouTube channel. And the one we put up on Friday, which was premiered, was an hour and a half with Martin O'Neill. And that has got a fantastic amount of hits so far, and hopefully it'll be there forever. I spoke to Martin about it on Friday just to warn him that what he'd said in 2012 was going to be up there again, but this was going to have a much wider audience. And he was actually fascinated, and he was very pleased, because he says, both on the video and to me privately, Wickham holds a very, very special place for him. So he was delighted, and I hope a lot of people will watch that, because, again, that raises a few pennies for the football club.
Well, anyone listening to this, head over to the Wycombe Wanderers Ex-Player Association Facebook page, because not only is that Martin O'Neill video there, there's a whole load of other fantastic bits as well. And if you don't know enough about the history of this club, then that's the place to start, because John and you and Alan and all the other guys involved, you do such a fantastic job preserving the history of this football club and also keeping us up to date and connected with our old former heroes. And, you know, they're still... I remember when I went to the dinner last year, I say former heroes, when I was sat with the likes of Dave Carroll, Mark West and all the other people. To me, they are still my heroes, even though I don't see them play every week now.
Well, that's exactly why I was happy to be involved from the start, because I went up to the football ground when I was a very cheeky schoolboy and asked Sid Cann with Martin Priestley and Graham Dorsett if I could have a trial with them. And amazingly, he allowed us to go up to train. We didn't realise that we were actually there to provide the wall for Paul Bates, Dennis Atkins, Norman West to practice their free kicks. But we were up there. And as you say, we were mixing with our heroes. And 70 years later, people like Dennis Atkins, Still and Mike Wicks, Len Worley, of course, they're still members of the Wycombe Wanderers Ex-Players Association, which is fantastic. All of them are our heroes.
Free kick from Ryan Allsop. Allsop drops it into the box. Cairns has come a long way. Takes it, spills it. Samuels has scored.
Yes!
Alex Samuel has given Wycombe their fourth goal of the evening. And Alex Cairns, he came a long way and he spilled it. It's a goalkeeping error, but Wycombe don't care because Samuel rolled it into the empty net. Fleetwood 1, Wycombe 4.
Earlier on, we heard about Ross Jevons, who is running 100 miles to raise money for Baby Loss Awareness Week. He completed his mammoth run at Adams Park on Thursday, and Justin Dealey was there to see it.
Here he comes, into the stadium. He's now going to do one lap. The weird thing is, it has been torrential rain here. And just a few moments ago, the rain stopped. Bright sunshine as Ross goes round the pitch to do his final lap. On the big screens here, they've got a picture of his boy Callum, and it says, "Daddy, you did it." Fantastic achievement. 100 miles in a week. Ross, you've done it.
Yeah, really pleased. To be honest, today I think adrenaline just got me through it. Knowing that I had friends and family waiting here at the end, obviously it's for an amazing cause. So today wasn't actually too bad. I'm just glad it's all done and out of the way.
And we were saying, a bit of a weird feeling because it was absolutely chucking it down with rain.
Yeah.
A couple of minutes before you were due, the rain stops, bright sunshine. Is that not a sign or what?
I thought so, yeah. I did think it was meant to be when the sun suddenly came out. It was running downhill bottom road. It was a good sign, yeah. And you know what, today Tommy's actually shared our story on their Instagram page, and I saw a lady replied saying that our story gave her hope, and for me that's what it's all about. It's not just the awareness of it, it's not just the money raised, but hopefully people going through similar things to what we got through and what we went through will have a bit more hope reading what our happy ending was right here.
We think you're amazing. Well done, congratulations.
Thank you very much for your support as well. I appreciate it. Cheers.
Thank you very much. Katie, you'll be talking to Andy on Friday morning, but just briefly, you've just seen your hubby there complete 100 miles in a week. How are you feeling at the moment?
I'm incredibly proud. He's done so much for getting the awareness out there, and especially for men to talk about it is a huge deal, I think.
And you now get your husband back.
Yes, and he can start changing nappies again, because I did all the nappies this week to give him a break.
I'm here with Dad, Barry. You look a very, very proud man at the moment.
Indeed, yeah. It's an amazing effort from Ross. Very determined guy. Fantastic cause. He's worked really hard this week. Weather's been pretty lousy most of the time, but as you just said, the sun has come out, which is, if that's not a blessing, I don't know what it is. It's extraordinary.
Jill, Ross's mum.
Yeah, it's fantastic. They've had such a terrible year, and I'm just so proud of him, really, because he could have said, "We've got Callum now, let's just accept that we've been very lucky and forget about everybody else," and he hasn't, and he's determined to help other people that's been through what they've been through, and I think that's fantastic.
I love a proud mum on the radio.
Well, that's what our job is, isn't it, to be proud of our children, so yeah, I am very proud and very happy for them.
Well done to Ross, a terrific effort for an incredibly worthwhile cause. If you'd like to donate to the Tommy's charity, type in Ross Jevons on the search bar on the Virgin Money Giving website. And we'll never be
live that.
Benfica make the short journey to Reading on Tuesday night in pursuit of their first points in the Championship. I spoke to Mark Mayo, the host of the Tilehurst End podcast for Reading, to find out what Wigan fans can expect. I started off by asking Mark if he expected Reading to be doing so well at this stage of the season.
No, thanks for having me on. And I can honestly say that we did our season preview show a few weeks ago, and I think we had 15th, 17th and 19th for our predictions for the season a few weeks ago, and they've been rapidly upgraded since.
The new manager, I think the football world was a bit sort of shocked to see the turnaround at Reading with Mark Bowen leaving and then the new guy coming in. I mean, he's started off incredibly well, hasn't he? I mean, the start, if he can keep this going, that'll be some turnaround.
Yeah, well, Mark Bowen hadn't really done anything to be sacked, to be honest. He was a decent bloke, had a relatively decent idea of how to get the Championship, how to get a team going in the Championship, and we seem to be making relatively good strides up until the lockdown. But now we're in a situation with, you know, a new manager's come in. Again, as you've said, someone that we had no idea who he was, really. We really didn't know. Chicago Fire was the team that he'd been managing previously. He hadn't got very good reviews there. But ultimately, he's come in and he's done a very good job of getting the team pointing in the right direction. And, you know, the results so far, they speak for themselves.
Yeah, 4 wins and a draw so far, and second only on goals scored to Bristol City at the top of the table. Is it just the new manager bounce, or can he sustain this as the campaign goes on?
Oh, I'd love to say can. We've been here before. I suppose most teams have had scenarios where they've started the season really well, and it's that first blip. I think managing a team when everything's going well and you're winning games is probably one of the easiest jobs in the world. But managing a team that's just lost a game or just had a surprise late equaliser go against them or something, that is really difficult. And that's what we're going to have to do at some point in the next few weeks. And, you know, that's going to come up, whether it's against Wickham or something. And that will really be the true test as to how good Reading are.
Now, football finances have been in the headlines all week with Project Big Picture, etc. Reading, famously in football, is a bit of a financial basket case. Is it promotion or bust this season? Is that the sort of pressure the manager's under?
The manager might well be under that sort of pressure. I like to think the club isn't. We've said on the podcast before that if we had the same owner five or 10 years ago, we'd probably be, you know, Premier League by now, because he's an owner who's happy to underwrite things. He's got a couple billion quid, which usually helps in these sort of scenarios. And the club, yeah, as you say, basket case isn't a bad way of putting it. So the club's finances look really dodgy on paper, but when it comes to actually having the cash, our owner is pretty straight up in that regard. And yeah, I mean, as a fan, I'm willing to bide my time and build something and aim for promotion in the next 2-3 years. But I think as a club, we probably are on a case of really thinking that it's this year or maybe even next.
Right, let's have a look towards Tuesday night. Wickham Wanderers. I can't imagine you're sat there quaking in your boots at the prospect of playing Wickham at the moment. Played 5, lost 5, scored 1 goal. So pretty much the pole opposite of what you guys have done this season. What do you expect from Wickham on Tuesday?
Well, I must say, at the start of the season, I'd looked at the fixtures, and we've had a couple games with the sort of what you might describe as the smaller team coming up from League One, and they've caused us some real problems. I remember Yeovil caused us some real problems, Bournemouth caused us some real problems. Obviously, those two teams went in completely opposite directions. And Wickham, it's a real shame there were no fans here, because it would have been the sort of game that the fans, you know, you could have a relatively good attendance for our fans, and Wickham would have brought a good amount of fans, and that would have, you know, increased the chances of a tight game, as this is basically, you know, these games are all taking place in a training ground scenario, basically. I do think that we'll be okay. Wickham, they're a team that I expect to have a good organisation about them. They've got a very good manager. They're a team that probably, if they can nick a goal, I think they'll be decent at holding a lead. But hopefully, as a Reading fan, I think that we'll be able to get that first goal. And I'm not too concerned about being able to hold that lead.
As you said, fans will be watching at home. Wigan fans will be sat behind their laptops and TVs watching the game. What can they expect from Reading? Who are the danger men?
Well, we're going to stick Lucas Joao up front, providing he starts and is fit, and we're pretty much just going to knock the ball into him. It's not going to be a too direct sort of play, but we're going to find him in and around the penalty spot. If we get the ball into him, he can hold off defenders as easily as anything, and then he can turn and shoot and score goals. So that's really what I'm expecting us to do. Lucas Shaw is the man who's probably going to score a goal or the goals if we're able to do that. And then in terms of building them up, Michael Olise is a brilliant young player in the midfield, very creative, just about to add an end product to his game, which will make him a real player. And then Ovie Ejaria as well is the not quite at the top of his game in the last few months, but when he is on top of his game, you can't get the ball off him.
Do you employ sort of the width of the pitch? Because Wickham have been undone of late out wide, it seems, really. That's where the space seems to be when getting at Wickham.
Yeah, I think so. We're not really a team that plays wingers, to be honest. So it'll be interesting to see how Paunovic gets to grips with that. But, you know, we're a team that has good fullbacks. We can push Omar Richards forward or down the left, and Tom Holmes will probably play again on the right. And he's actually a centre-back, Tom Holmes, but in the couple games he's played as a right-back, he's been very happy to get forward. And that's how we scored the winner against Watford a few weeks ago, with him getting into an advanced position. So I expect that to be something that we can make a good, you know, assessment of. And one thing I would say about Paunovic is if that is a flaw of Wickham, then he's been pretty decent at setting out game plans in the last few weeks. So hopefully he's got a good strategy on him.
And on the other end of the pitch, is there any glimmers of light for Wickham fans in the Reading defence? Any angles that Wickham should be exploiting?
Well, I think in terms of exploiting Reading, you can probably, if you can get a good ball into the box, Michael Morrison's not the quickest of defenders, and Liam Moore isn't the tallest of defenders. So there is, you know, some joy to be had if you can hit the high ball and do well. And also, I would just say that for Reading so far this season, we've not really had, you know, the sort of doomsday scenario of falling behind early in the game or you know, having to come back after a decision goes against us. So I think really if Wickham can rattle Reading early on, then I think that's definitely going to be the best hope.
Right, Mark, all that's left then really is a prediction. We won't hold you to it, but it'd be interesting to see what you reckon going into the game. What do you reckon the score will be?
Well, we're not a brilliant goal-scoring team at the moment, so I think a 2-0 win is what I'm going to go for at the moment, but there could very easily be 1-0 and ground out, I suppose.
Right, that's your lot for this week. Big thanks to John D. Taylor, Ross and Katie Jevons, Justin Dealey and Mark Mayo. Keep the faith. Come on, you Blues.